Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night needing to go to the bathroom and you just didn't want to turn the light on? You know turning the light on will help you see, but you know that feeling, waking up at 2:30 in the morning, making a quiet deal with yourself, I'm not turning on that light, because you know the rules. If the light goes on, your eyes will sting, your brain kicks into gear, and your body thinks it's morning, and suddenly you're awake, when all you wanted to do was stay half asleep and go take care of your business. So you shuffle in the dark, eyes half closed, hand on the wall like a sleepy zombie, making way more noise than anybody needs to hear at any point in time, and being called by your older cousin a super spy. Thank you, Jock. You're trying not to wake up. You're trying not to see too clearly. You're trying to stay inside the comfort zone of drowsiness where the dark lets you pretend that you're still asleep. You tiptoe through the dark, hoping that the night can just keep lulling you along and you can get back to bed quickly. Sometimes we avoid light on purpose. If we turned it on, if we really saw things, we'd have to be awake. And being awake is inconvenient. Being awake demands something. It breaks the spell of comfortable sleep. Turning on the light forces awareness. Once the light is on, you must face the reality that the night is over, that you're awake, and that you must act. That's the worst part. If you're awake, it means you're supposed to be doing stuff. We live in a world that constantly lulls us into sleep. Sometimes it's the literal sleep of the night, but more often it's the moral, spiritual, ethical sleep that quietly settles over our hearts. We like it that way. Darkness can be comfortable. It keeps us from having to face truths that we'd rather ignore. It allows us to postpone uncomfortable conversations with ourselves, with others, with God. Darkness is seductive because it allows us to stay unexamined, unchallenged, and unaccountable. And the same is true morally and spiritually. We can live, speak, and act without fully seeing ourselves, without being fully honest with God or our neighbors. But the moment light shines, whether through conscience, scripture, or God himself, we can no longer pretend. The night is over. The dawn is near. Wake up! You're welcome. Paul captures this urgency in Romans 13 when he writes, "The night is far gone, the day is at hand, so let us cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light." We cannot pretend that moral sleepiness is harmless. The night is ending. The light is coming. We often prefer spiritual drowsiness because if the light comes on, then that means we have to admit something. If Christ's truth shines on our words, our habits, our excuses, our compromises, we'd have to acknowledge what's really there. If we step into the light, we can't keep pretending that everything is in order. If you turn on the light, then you have to see the mess that's on the floor, the clutter in the corner, the things that we've tripped over a dozen times, the things that we try to navigate around instead of realizing the need to clean it up. Darkness lets us stay numb, just like that 2:30 a.m. trip to the bathroom with all of our resentments, prejudices, hidden sins, and comfortable habits. We sometimes whisper to our souls, "Don't turn the light on. Don't wake up. Don't look too closely. Let me stay in the half darkness a little longer." But Advent says, "Wake up. The dawn is here and Christ is shining. The light has risen, but you've just been keeping your eyes closed." Consider the darkness that grows when no one is paying attention. For years here in Houston, it appeared executives were running a perfectly successful business, climbing to unprecedented financial heights. But behind the scenes, accounting tricks, manipulation and deception were running unchecked. They created shell companies to hide losses. They shifted debt off their books so it wouldn't be noticed. They reported profits that were not actually profits after all. People trusted numbers because they wanted to believe everything was fine. Darkness thrived because people don't want to look too closely. They didn't want to turn on the light. But you see, the consequences were devastating, not just for the Enron executives, but for the employees, the retirees, the investors, and the communities who trusted the company. Jobs evaporated overnight. Life savings disappeared. Families were uprooted. Communities were shaken. All of this because darkness had been allowed to grow unchallenged, because people had been lulled into ethical sleepiness. And the strange thing was, many of the people involved were not villains in their own minds. They weren't waking up each morning thinking, how can I be evil today? Mwahaha, where is the wax for my mustache? Do you think that anyone being evil ever really says, yes, I am evil today, you caught me? Most of them were simply operating in what had become business as usual, because that's how darkness works. It doesn't show up wearing a dastardly cape and a top hat. It shows up disguised as normal. And because so many people were spiritually and morally sleepy, because they were used to the dark, they kept walking forward without ever turning on the light. But you see, we don't even have to look at corporate America to see the same patterns. We can even think about churches, communities, families. When trust is misused, when authority is wielded irresponsibly, when darkness thrives in silence or in secrecy, the damage is real. People are hurt. Faith is shaken. Hope is diminished. Darkness thrives. We've all seen the news lately about a large, prominent Houston congregation where leadership structure was upended in a massive internal shift. Decisions were made behind closed doors. Authority was redirected in ways that many members didn't actually understand. And people suddenly began to feel as though trust had been broken when they discovered they had no more say in their own church. Even churches can drift into a kind of organizational darkness. Secrecy, power struggles, defensiveness, fear of the light. And the damage always spreads. It doesn't ever stay in one place. People become disillusioned. Young adults walk away. Members feel unseen or unheard. Communities fracture. Darkness, even when it feels safe, always costs more than we think. But isn't that how things have to be, though? Don't businesses have to act that way? No. There are plenty of examples whenever doing the right thing may cost quite a bit, but people still do it. When Johnson & Johnson in 1982 found out that 7 people died after cyanide-laced Tylenol capsules reached the market, the company did not hesitate. They recalled every single Tylenol bottle in the nation, over 31 million bottles at a staggering cost that no one helped them with. They acted transparently, decisively, and sacrificially. Or Patagonia, on Black Friday of all days, saying, "Don't buy this jacket." Rather than trying to manipulate guilt or pressure, instead asking that, "Do people really need to buy our product today? And if they choose to buy, do they trust that their money is used responsibly?" Or CVS Pharmacy, when they stopped selling all tobacco products in 2014 because they wanted to align themselves with healthcare rather than addictive substances, losing $2 billion every single year. And even now, having to close over 1,000 locations over the last 3 years, 10% of its locations, streamlining to continue its mission of doing what's right for the community. But when Scripture talks about darkness, it's not always talking about dramatic things or obvious rebellions. Often darkness is the stuff that we've stopped noticing. Habits we excuse, patterns we justify, sharp words that we shrug off, grudges we quietly feed, sins that we rename so we don't have to feel convicted, the things we keep in the corner because we hope God doesn't bring them into the center of the room. Do we really think that the sins listed in Romans 13 were just exceptions to what everyday people were doing. Darkness allows us to say, I don't want to deal with that yet. I don't want the light to expose that. Let me stay comfortable. But the longer we stay asleep, the more damage that we do, even as we know that Jesus is coming. It's like this time I was having this terrible dream one night as a child, and I began screaming bloody murder to the point where my father jumped out of bed, ran down the hallway, slipped on a dryer sheet, began pinball bouncing from wall to wall in the hallway, and then finally jumped up on my bed to protect me from imaginary dogs, whatever I was dreaming about. And I did not want the lights to come on at all, because I did not want to know just how beat up my dad was because of my bad dream. I didn't want to see what was needed. But the problem is that you cannot put ice on the bruises if you haven't turned the lights on to figure out where they are. See, you can't fix the brokenness in the world or inside of yourself without allowing the light to come flooding in and show you what is happening inside so you can change. But you see, Matthew is reminding us that just having better ethical behavior or more vigilance, it's not enough. The wake-up call, it's about Jesus. Advent introduces us to a child who steps into the world when we are unprepared, vulnerable, and still half asleep. You see, children have a way of revealing what we would rather hide. They ask questions that we cannot ignore. They let the pastor know if he's preaching way too long. But you see, the thing is that the children are the ones who are the most likely to tell you things that you didn't want to know. They're the ones who are going to say, wow, have you always had a mole there in the center of your forehead? Wow, do you always talk with that lisp? Or even along the lines of, did you ever have hair on your head? They notice, though, the inconsistencies in our behavior, the speech, our ethics. They're the ones to challenge us with moral clarity that we often lose as adults. And the thing is that we know that when we were children, someone taught us honesty, fairness, compassion, justice. We were instructed not to cheat, not to deceive, not to take shortcuts. But somewhere along the way, adulthood gave us permission to forget. We rationalized our compromises. We found ways to hide darkness instead of shining light on it because it wasn't quite as dark as something else. And then we look at the next generation and wonder why they seem to prioritize career advancement over integrity, why they don't seem to have any loyalty to the places where they work, why their ethical actions seem optional, why they make TikToks that make light of anything they do with their bodies, why the world feels so fractured. As the words in Cats in the Cradle would remind us, I'm going to grow up to be just like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. Children imitate what they see. They learn from actions. They learn from attitudes. And they learn from our failures. When we work too hard, the kids work too hard. When we look for the easy way out, the children can't handle life either. But the good news is that it's never too late to model the right way. No matter our past missteps, we can begin today. We can choose integrity, honesty. We can follow the light and have a chance at the next generation seeing it and following. But you see, as inconvenient as it may be, it's still needed. Whether tiptoeing through the dark and we stub our toes because we didn't want to turn on the light, or when we realize that the bruises are going to be there whether we see them or not, the truth is better than the fear that we may imagine. But the child of Advent, the Christ child, works in the same way. He exposes darkness not to condemn us, but to redeem us. He illuminates our shortcomings, our ethical lapses, our moral sleepiness, because he's offering us grace forgiveness, and the opportunity to start anew. The light does not shame, it heals. The light does not punish, it restores. The child comes for the ethically distracted people. The child comes for us. The ethical life, though, it's more than businesses. It's communities, families, legacies. It's more than children. It's nephews, nieces, our students, our neighbors' kids, the children in our own church. They pay attention to whether ethics matter in real life. They pay attention to where ethics matter in our life. Because if all they see is compromise and self-interest, they will do the same. If they see integrity and courage, they will be inspired to walk in the light. What does Romans 13 look like when we put on the armor of light? It's more than just avoiding the things that it listed in there. There are things listed in there that I've never really had to worry about in my everyday life. But if we're honest, it looks like truth-telling, even when it's uncomfortable. It looks like fair treatment of others and not exploiting or manipulating. It looks like generosity, being free and honest. It looks like forgiveness and patience to others and to ourselves. It looks like daily resisting choices that can lead us into darkness. The ones that we say, well, everyone else is doing it, I'm sure it's not that bad. But you see, Advent is a season when the church stands between darkness and daylight. It's that early morning moment when the sky is starting to turn blue, but the sun hasn't yet risen. I have no idea what it actually looks like in real life, but the thing about the sunrise, rumor has it, you cannot stop it. You can't close the blinds and try to pretend it's not there. You can close them, but it's still there. You can try to bury your head under the pillow, but it's still there. You can pretend it's the middle of the night, but the dawn keeps on coming. Because Jesus says he will come at an hour when we do not expect, but that's exactly why we need to be awake. Because the light of Christ is not about being harsh. It's not about humiliating. It's not a gotcha moment from God. I caught you. It's helping us to finally see a way forward, to be healed, to be children of the day, the light, the dawn. And so as Paul says that once Christ has been put on, once we are clothed in his righteousness, then we shed off the shadows. Because putting on Christ is more than what's on the outside. It's what transforms us on the inside. So let's be honest about the things that we have kept in our darkness. The bitterness that we've nursed. The habits that we've justified. The lies that we've told ourselves to get past the decisions that we've made. The secret selfishness. The fears, the pride, the excuses, the unspoken resentments. You don't cast these off in order to earn God's love. You cast them off because God's love is already shining on you. And as we do, the scripture illuminates, the prayer centers, the community strengthens, the service wakens compassion, worship keeps our eyes open. We are meant to wake up not just to a moment, but to a rhythm that is meant to change our life. This whole next month is meant to be about resetting before a new year has dawned, where we offer forgiveness, correction, grace, and a new beginning, but especially with ourselves. So here we stand, the first Sunday of Advent, the Sunday of hope. The light is coming on, but are we going to fight the sunrise today? Are we going to keep condemning everything around us but refusing to awaken ourselves? The alarm is going off. The curtains are opening. The horizon is glowing. And you're pretending that that alarm is just a good beat to dance to. But let's be honest. The day is at hand. So if we wake up, today is not a day for fear or shame, but hope, mercy, and restoration. So today, as the baby is going to be in the manger, let us let the child show us what is good and what is true, but also the forgiveness for when it hasn't been true for us. Because today is when the dawn draws near, the light is shining, and today is the day when we are called to wake up. Thanks be to God.